Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
Welcome again, everyone, to another edition of Ringside Wrap presented by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. I am Mike Sempervivi along with Les Thatcher. And last week we were talking about tornadoes.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Rich had some stuff to take care of last week. We hope tonight Mother Nature doesn't take care of Rich or anybody else living in Alabama, Georgia, or anywhere else where these tornadoes are at right now or heading. Rich is locked down in a basement listening to us, at least until his power goes out, and unfortunately will not be with us this evening. And, maybe we shouldn't have talked about tornadoes to lead off the show last week.
Well, you know what? I haven't seen the national news or weather or anything, but we're under tornado watches here, and it was on the news tonight that this is the wettest April in the last 175 years in the city of Cincinnati.
I remember we were talking about that last week. You say it would take about a spit from the sky to actually break the record. And, I guess a long, hot, humid summer is to follow. Not happy with that, living at the beach. I hate it when it's humid. Do you have the humidity out there?
Wow.
I know Rich gets it bad in Georgia, and throughout the Southeast it's bad. The humidity in Delaware is awful, absolutely awful.
Well, you know, we haven't hit the humidity, Mike. It was kind of breezy. Actually, it's only been in the mid-60s today, and the weather tonight said that the high tomorrow will be only 59. And so the weather's been kind of crazy. We did hit 80 degrees, I think, at one point, but it's basically been 70s. But then, we've had so much gusty wind and one thing and another that it's, I guess, just kept, the temperatures down to a certain degree anyway. But this craziest weather, I think, across the country that I can remember in any length of time. It's, I don't know, Mother Nature's not a happy camper, I don't think.
No, I was thinking when all the snow has been dumped on us here at the beach in the last two winters, I'm thinking, is TNA, but, Mother Nature has got TNA booking for the weather, apparently.
There's a good analogy if I ever heard one. What I want to say on the front end here before it slips my mind, I had sent Rich an email not knowing that he was hunkered down in the basement, but the training camp in Manchester for May 14, 13, 14, 15 has been postponed till later in the summer. There have been some building issues, I'm told, and so I'm looking to reschedule possibly June or July, so I'll keep you posted on that. And obviously that'll be posted on both my websites and I guess on Georgia Wrestling History, when the new dates are set. So I just want to get that out of the way before it slipped my mind. And what did you think of the draft?
I was thinking, there's UFC 129 this weekend. There was the draft. I got to ask you one question first. It's been a semi-big story because of who it is on the internet, especially, but to talk about a lot of guys who may be coming up with contracts, and CM Punk has been floated out there from sources and people here and there, and I know Mike Johnson talked about it, and Dave Meltzer has brought it up. It's CM Punk, is he happy right now? Is this a ploy to try to better a deal with WWE? Does he really want time off? Is he really that unhappy? Contract negotiations, Les, I know you've been around enough offices and probably had to see things firsthand. What is your gut feeling on CM Punk right now? And how he was in a great feud with Randy Orton. Obviously, he hasn't probably been treated the way he believes he should have throughout his entire run, but he's been great in a feud with Randy Orton. They always say he was one of the guys to tap out The Undertaker. He's been in a good position. What do you think about this whole thing, and is it just a contract negotiation ploy?
Well, you know, I probably a little bit of both, Mike, I honestly believe. Well, first of all, you know, in current day, if there is one plus about there being one company, it's the fact that these guys, well, you know, Edge retiring obviously can afford to retire. Jericho, of course, he's got the band back up. He can afford, you know, to take time off. When Christian walked away for a while, you know, the guys, if they take care of their money, you know, they have some leverage. You know, where years ago, it you know, that probably wasn't the case. I mean, it wasn't good money, but it's just that, you know, it wasn't as consistent, and obviously, with the pay-per-views, you know, these guys can come away from Mania with some huge, just a huge payday off that one show. I would think, you know, Punk's got some leverage, and I would say part of it, and part of it is probably he doesn't feel like he's being handled properly. Where would he go? I have no earthly idea. I it's hard for me to think that if you walk away from that, and you may be having some problems, do you go to TNA where the problems could be even more severe, or you'll be rolling your eyes and wondering what the hell did I do this for? I don't know that Punk has. I think he's been to Japan, but I don't know that he's, you know, a big mover over there, or that would be something, you know, that would be as lucrative for him long term. It's just really hard to say, but I would think that anybody that they feel they have over to any degree at this point, they need to hang on to, because they're in trouble, I think, in that regard. It's I think that's in part why they rushed the draft, which was formula. We can talk about that a little bit later, too.
Let's see, especially
you know
when
what
you
I mean by
the
formula?
It was very paint by numbers, and I got to be honest, and I'm not trying to act like a soothsayer or the great Karnak here, but you know, I put the envelope to my head as soon as John Cena was drafted, and I was thinking, you know what? My gut told me that was going to flip on the other side, but I'm sorry, I know we'll get back into that, but
yeah, I think with Punk they've got to hang on to him.
Look at the heel side of Raw. If he wouldn't be there, and that's where he does have leverage, because you go, okay, Alberto, who, you know, he did a good job on Friday as far as the expressions and everything, and I don't think he's there yet as far as people really buying how much they hate him. You got The Miz, but then there's just CM Punk and Jack Swagger, R-Truth, Dolph Ziggler. They're not seemingly, Drew McIntyre aren't in positions to upstage CM Punk, and I think Punk can obviously upstage Alberto and Miz, so he seems to be in a really good spot there, where I know, even because I wonder when people try to say, well, it's because he hasn't been treated right, and I can see that from the time leading up till now, but he's got the key position on an A show to steal the show if he wants to, and I think he can.
Yeah.
Lot to walk away from.
Yeah, you're right. And again, what are your options if you walk away? You know, which, now what I don't know, does he have investments in other businesses possibly around his, you know, home in Chicago? Maybe he does.
People do say, it is on record, I guess, people, more than one person has come out and said he has been very good with his money.
Well, you know, then maybe he's in the position to take a hike if he wants to. Let's face it, wouldn't all of us like to be able to retire and do whatever we might want to do at an early age? You know, I mean, that's it's certainly part of the, if there is such a thing, I think the American, I don't call it the American dream anymore. I've been around too long. It's the American fantasy. But well, you know, our government has created that problem. But, I mean, you know, to be able to do that, I think, is good. But, again, I think he loves the business. Where does he go? I just can't imagine anybody with any common sense. You know, a TNA would almost have to offer some unrealistic numbers, I think, to anybody of any value right now to go down there and subject yourself to whatever. Because I don't see that bettering itself in any way, shape, or form anytime soon. I just think, you know, the industry right now is not good. I mean, you know, people talk about how it cycles and, you know, wrestling's hot and cool, and then other times it's not, you know, the fad of the moment. There's no reason for it to be now, quite honestly. Where they've missed the boat, I think, Mike, and it's, you know, and it's not a new thing. It's not. I know I read on the internet sometimes, and the way some people talk is like, wow, they've made this mistake that's never, as though it has never been done before. And I've seen it in territories where you get too comfortable with a handful of people, and money is good, and, you know, towns are drawing, and your television ratings are good, and all of a sudden these guys start to lose their fire, and whoops, what do we do now? And that, in a lot of times, is the reason for the down cycle. You know, it's not so much that people lose their interest in the business itself, but in the product that you're presenting them. And I don't see, you know, to me right now it's lukewarm. Cena, I don't think, you know, again, let me reiterate here, as I have in the past, I respect John Cena as a person. I like John. He works his ass off. He's not a great performer. And the dorky character that the writers have created doesn't hit the masses. It's not a Steve Austin or a, you know, Dwayne Johnson or Ricky Steamboat or Ric Flair or anybody, you know, anybody of that ilk. It's, he has a, you know, a niche audience that buys into him, and then there's a great audience. There were probably a lot of adult males that when they thought he was going to another show, they're thinking, thank God we wanted to see him again. You know, or listen to the silly. Well, you know, and the other part of that is too, it's just whether, I don't know if it's John, or, and if it is, he's wrong, and if it's the writers, they're wrong. But this whole thing that through thick and thin, up and down, John smiles and makes jokes. You know,
well, and that's where I got to be honest. It amazes me that in professional wrestling throughout its entire time is so great with psychology and trying to figure things out and work through people and everything, but sometimes they miss the most obvious things, and it's like there's so many easy ways to get out of the issues they have, including with Cena, where it's like you portray him as, okay, the chicks dig him, the little kids like him, that's the role he plays, and you play to that strength more, but, and you have Randy Orton, and they don't, even if they were doing that where it's just like they have him so dorky, but then he never gets his, it's just he stays dorky. And it's like there's ways to get out of that, to market him and focus him to do something else, and they don't do it. What is it about wrestling where it's cyclical, because it seems to make the same mistakes before something snaps it out of it, or a change happens, or something shakes
up?
In
years past, you had territories, so, you know, you exchange talent. You could try guys out. You could move them out and move them in. They don't have that option now. But they've dug that hole themselves years ago, obviously. You know, and I've said this before, too. I think if Vince ever thought he made a mistake when he took over the world, the biggest mistake was not making his peace with a few of these territories and allowing them to function and actually subsidizing them if it was necessary. And I think if he had it to go back and do again, you know, he would find that to be of value. They have dug this hole, and I think they're going to dig it deeper, Mike, because I believe that when they see they don't have a Steve Austin or a Dwayne Johnson or whoever, that, okay, we're going to revert to cheap heat or stupid comedy because the guys that we have here, can't do the job that those particular guys I just mentioned can do. So now we have to play off of, you know, cheap pops. Okay, fine. But then that, you know, there's no substance. That's like cotton candy. Smells good, looks good. The minute your mouth is, you know, it's disappeared.
Gone.
And it doesn't linger and you can't savor it. And that was a secret to Steve. You know, I'm using Austin a lot as an example, but Bret Hart or any of the top guys, you know, over the years that have been over. And part of that goes back to what we, you know, I've said for a long time, is that these performers, are they good, are they bad? I don't know. But you can't know what their limitations are until you allow them some freedom of creativity on their own and find what their level actually is. And then you can either improve upon it, pull it back a little bit, but you can shape it. you know. But they have, you have to know what that is. But I would guarantee you, with guys like Ziggler and a lot of these guys, they have been so manufactured and micromanaged that they're, you know, no one really knows what they are capable of. They just know what they have programmed into them. And I think that's the problem with the product. I think it's going to continue to be the problem as long as they continue to, you know, it's like the whole thing about you can't use the word athlete or wrestling and that sort of thing. It's like, does it matter? I mean, you know, only to them. And is that going to make them a better company or more money? I don't know. I think you'll find over the next year that buy rates are going to be down. Ratings, you know, have already dropped a little bit. I guess they were up Monday night. It was 3.5, I believe, on Monday night. But then probably that was a little bit due to, you know, curiosity about the draft. I personally didn't watch the whole thing. And like I say, and, you know, when I mentioned formula, the greatest bookers in the world, the greatest bookers in my 50-plus years, all, you know, they had formulas. I mean, at least foundations. And at some point, they started repeating themselves. And that's why, like, baseball managers or head coaches in pro football, or, you know, they moved on and they were replaced because, it, you know, they burned out creatively. Well, you've also got a lot of these writers who really don't understand that. You know, they don't understand a George Scott or a Leo Garibaldi or an Eddie Graham, you know, or any one of that magnitude. They understand how to write a story, but they look at the guys I just mentioned are guys who worked within the business and understood the art. And these guys are trying to create a new art. And is it possible? Yeah, it is. But again, I think that's what's weakened the product. And I don't see a change in that. It may stabilize and maintain what it is, and then they may find ways to sell more T-shirts and this and that and the other thing. But until you let some of these kids loose and see exactly what they have to offer, you know, you're just not going to, you know, you're not going to get your next Steve Austin or whoever it happens to be. It's just not going to happen. I think virtually any top performer that I worked with or worked, you know, beside over my period of time, they were that because they were, you know, just, you said, you know, this is so cliche, but it's, you know, their own personality times 10. And that's, you know, I think Randy's over, but Randy can't carry that company on his back. Cena's not able to do that. And, you know, would Christian make a good champion? Well, you know, if they handled him differently, maybe. He didn't do numbers for TNA as champion. And you know, and that's the other thing, too. You can be a hell of a worker and a very good performer and a good guy and a company man and any other positive attributes that you can think of, but still that doesn't mean if we put a belt on you that, you know, you're going to draw. And, of course, the belts have been weakened in that respect anyway. But, you know, so it's just, I think it's a dog chasing its tail, you know, to a great degree. And, like with the whole draft thing, putting these guys in T-shirts and then, you know, to see a bunch of guys who last week hated the guy that's being drafted and they're applauding that he's coming on there, you know, or to see a heel get, you know, I'm wetting myself because that babyface is coming to our show. What? I mean... You know, or the Del Rio thing about him getting all upset in Spanish. What the hell is it? You know, why is he upset? He's still going to get a paycheck.
Yeah. And you know? He gets his title shot. Nothing really changed. That's all. And then at the end, I mean, it's like, so Cena's already been drafted. And yes, Miz got the win, but he had, you know, obviously Punk and Alberto hamming it up, you know, giving the kisses and all that stuff. But it's like, he was already drafted and gone, and I know it was to set up him being, you know, being back and everything, but it was just like, it didn't make any sense. Like, why are you so happy all of a sudden he's gone just because the Miz beat him, you know?
Right,
it was
right.
Just, it just
and if you remember, wasn't it, when was it that they did the same things with Triple H, right? They changed brands and then brought him back before the day was over.
That's
so
the
it's,
thing. He,
again,
he never
you know,
ended up on SmackDown.
Yeah, it's almost like these guys, and I don't know this, it's almost like these writers have a book and they say, well, you know, here's the formula for draft day. We do this and do this and do this. And then you put a bunch of guys who, up to this point, have been insignificant in either company in colored T-shirts and put them in a battle royal, and now whoever wins this thing all of a sudden becomes significant. Why? You know, it's like a baseball manager who's got a guy who he's bounced back and forth between AAA and the major league team all year, and all of a sudden this is the guy the manager's going to go with in the deciding game of the World Series. I mean, in that world, in that situation, I think every writer and baseball expert would think, is this guy nuts? Is he on drugs? Why would he do that? So why would you put guys who have basically looked at the lights every night for the last year in a position to determine what happens with your company? What kind of general manager are you? I mean, again, it comes back to the L-O-G-I-C word and a little common sense. And that's, you know, if there is a formula in this business over the years, that's it. And they're not even paying any attention to it, really.
Now, Christian on ECW did a great job, because obviously the point of ECW was, okay, let's see what Punk can do. Let's see Morrison and Miz. And there were guys who kind of, Sheamus and Ezekiel Jackson, let's see what they can do. And Christian was a part of a lot of that in trying to help people along. Looking at the SmackDown roster right now, here are your number one baby faces. Randy Orton, great, no problem there. Christian, then it's Kane, Sin Cara, Daniel Bryan. Now, Daniel Bryan obviously can work with anybody, and Christian can work with anybody too. Looking at the SmackDown heel side, it's Sheamus and Wade Barrett are finally for the first time, or not for the first time, but really this is obviously going to be their chance to really step it up and stand out. And obviously there are guys who, for some reason, WWE has buried them leading into WrestleMania and did an awful job with them 100% all the way around, but they're going to get their chance now. Randy Orton, I'm not saying wrestles a Randy Orton match, but you're going to wrestle Randy Orton. Randy Orton is not going to wrestle you. It just that seems to be the way with a lot of his matches. So him with Sheamus and Barrett, obviously he'll have to be with one of the two of them, but it seems like a lot is going to fall on Christian and Daniel Bryan right now. From what you've seen of Sheamus and Wade Barrett, how they've been booked and, you know, their potential going forward, how do you think that's going to play out on SmackDown? Because those are going to be the top four guys, really.
Well, you know, I think
four or five guys.
Yeah, Barrett's been wishy-washy, I think. Well, the way they've used him has been that way. So until they do something to change that perception, I think that's the perception that, you know, that the viewers are going to have. I think Sheamus, just by his look, by his demeanor, will be stronger because, you know, just for those reasons I just mentioned, his look and his demeanor, and he comes across as a more vicious, you know, brutal type of guy. You know, obviously I understand why they moved Sin Cara to SmackDown. They can edit him. You know,
yeah, well,
they
might, it should have been that way in the first place.
Yeah. Somebody should have thought that at the beginning. You're right. But I don't see him. Well, here again, you know, maybe in Mexico City, you know, the children will gather around the television and elbow one another for position to watch the great Sin Cara, you know, on TV. But I don't think in Des Moines, Iowa, that's going to be the case.
The crazy thing is, too, even though they move him to SmackDown and it is taped and that's good, unless they turn Daniel Bryan heel, you look at that heel roster on SmackDown, it's like the whole roster, forget about the heel roster, the whole roster whatsoever, you got Tyson Kidd, and that's about it that he can actually work with.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, take that back. William Regal is on that side, too, but I don't see him wrestling all that much, and it's like, okay, great. You got Sin Cara. You want him to actually learn the American style, even though he probably should be in Florida right now, but fine. You want him to learn the American style. Who the hell is he supposed to actually be against to make himself that much better to be accepting to the American audience so you can get your money back out of him?
Good point.
I mean,
I don't really have an answer.
I mean, in a way. Cody's got a new character, and that's, I want to ask you about that later, too. But you look at these other guys, and it's like, Jesus, he's supposed to get better against Alex Riley or Brodus Clay or Wade Barrett. They just started.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing with Dan, I think the thing with Daniel Bryan, with Dragon, they made a mistake on the front end. And again, you know, once you've submerged somebody into a particular niche, it's, you play hell getting them out of there, you know, and that takes far more creativity and you know, manipulation than does getting them in a bad position to start with. You know, the whole thing about first impressions comes across very strong in our business. I think with Bryant, instead of trying to make him into a clown, you know, into Mr. Personality, and the whole thing with the girls and that whole nine yards, I think I would have tried to get him work on his facials, but I'd have tried to turn him into more of a Chris Benoit, you know, in terms of his ring persona, because that's actually where his strengths would lie, you know.
Yeah, the machine,
and to have
the
your announcers
wrestling get, machine.
Yes, absolutely, and have your announcers get him over as such. You know, he's not Mr. Congeniality or Mr. Personality. He's a wrestling machine, and that's what he's about. And you know, and is he giving away a little size? Yes, he is. As did Guerrero, and as you know, Eddie, and as did Chris. You know, but then again, if you're going to, you're not. First of all, you don't put him with Kane or Big Show to make him look even smaller. But what you do is if a guy has got him by 30 or 40 pounds and a couple inches in height, then You can't. It's not like you can't call attention to it. It's television. It's not radio, but you also have him overcome those hurdles because he is a wrestling machine because of his technical excellence. You know, that sort of thing, and again, build in some logic opposed to, well, you know, the guy didn't have personality. Well, let's get him some chicks and we'll have him become a sex machine, and he's even worse at that. You know, I mean. He just seems, you know, he seems out of his element with that. Another, you know, when I said earlier about them, I think digging the hole deeper and just trying to find anything because they realize they don't have any depth. This whole thing with JR and Cole has just gone past the point of any value at all.
Oh man,
you know, I mean,
Jesus, I was so I don't want to say depressed, and this is going to sound awful. I love Jim Ross. You know, we had him on the show, and I've ordered the barbecue sauce. I mean, I have one of the only wrestling card that I actually have is a Jim Ross autographed piece of mat, believe it or not. But it was when they went to the shot of him warming up, it was just like, you know, the air kind of came out of me of, really, I know they're doing this at the pay-per-view, but, you know, I'm probably in that camp. I'm sick of seeing JR. And I know, hopefully, that he'll end up at the top of all this, but it's like, you know what, more stuff, like the kissing the foot and everything. Just, why are you doing this? It just drove
right.
me nuts.
Well, you know, you know, he's my personal friend. We work together. I have so much respect for him in terms of what he's done with that microphone or what he did as the head of talent relations. And, you know, if I were the head of creative, or if I were a booker or whatever title you want to slap on me, and I was looking for something to grab the attention of the viewing audience, the last thing unless everybody else died in a plane crash, I can't even imagine why I'd have started this whole mess to begin with, you know? And it does, you know, do the fans want to see him bury his foot in Cole's ass? Of course they do. But how many people are going to buy a pay-per-view for that, you know? And the way you approached it, I mean, it's just, you know, you've almost given it away on your television Monday night anyway. What's left?
Yeah. And I mean, I think we have joked about this. I know we have. I always want to, like, you know, I remember Mid-South, one of my, and there were a lot of memories, but one of my funnier memories was always Michael Hayes and Ted DiBiase, the country whooping match, because it was the first time I'd seen a country whooping match. But, I mean, you obviously, I mean, always rolled your eyes at that, you know, addition put onto the match. What do you think about it in this? I know it's everybody will love seeing Cole get 10 lashes and whatever they do with Swagger in this, but – What's your opinion on this, too? And honestly, do you see this actually, do you see them drawing this out more, even though it should have been dead at WrestleMania?
I hope not. They may, because they don't, you know, again, because they don't have a lot of things to hang their hat on. But this should have been over at WrestleMania. It should have been finished there. You know, it's one in, I mean, I don't care if it's Cornette and JR. I don't care if it's Gordon Soley and whoever. I mean, it's one and done. It shouldn't be drug out, because then it becomes comedy. You know, you can buy, well, you know, you can buy you and your boss at work, you know, going, you know, verbally one time, but you're not going to see you and your boss every day just, you know, getting in each other's faces, because one of you is going to go to start with. I mean, but the point is the people around you are going to get tired of seeing it too, and these guys aren't wrestlers. So it becomes Laurel and Hardy or the Three Stooges at some point. Whether that's how you begin it or whether that's how you want it to be perceived, that's how it's going to be perceived at some point. Because, again, when you watch these guys physically, they're not athletes. They're not wrestlers. And so it takes on a comedy air, even if you're trying to make it as serious as you possibly can. So, but again, I think part of this is they're looking to see, we don't – what do we do from here? Well, we've got JR and Cole. And how long does Cole stay in that stupid cage? And, you know, if you're going to make him into a manager and try to build heat on him, then get him the hell off the microphone and do that. But,
well, that's what I thought they were going to go with this. And, I mean, obviously some people – he's got go-away heat as far as being an announcer. I could see the Sir Michael Cole thing, actually, like, you know, I'd see him as a manager for Karma or something like that. Obviously, his assault on the women's division. They need managers. That we've always thought that, I mean, at least a lot of us thought that, obviously, one of the big things that's missing today is, you know, not having managers for people, like, you know, Estrada with Umaga, and, you know, they always get rid of these guys. Do you see legs for him as do you think, do you buy him as a manager with the role that's been created for him, or do you just want to see him go away?
You know, not long term, because first of all, I don't think he's Bobby Heenan or Gary Hart or in those terms. I think they've gotten out of him pretty much what they're going to get. And do it again. If you put me in the driver's seat, then I realize if I've done this, then either he or Lawler has to go off of that team. Because, you know, to keep him isolated in a cage after what they've been through physically.
He's got to go.
Yeah. I mean, somebody's got to go. But, you know, now you mentioned the girls, the women's division, the divas. Okay, I think any of us that understands the business realizes that there's no Mildred Burks or Penny Banners in this group, with the exception of possibly Natalya and Beth Phoenix. So here's the idea. Why don't we call to the attention of everyone watching how inadequate these women really are.
Yeah.
You know?
They do that so often. I mean, the Daniel Bryan thing with Michael Cole, it happens constantly. And that's one of those, that's where the weird psychology thing of, guys, Vince McMahon, and obviously everything's got to go through Vince McMahon. That's the way everyone has said it for years. You can come up with anything. Vince has got to approve it. I can't say play psychologist, but what is it with him? Because we've talked about, you know, over and over again about the developmental system, about he wants to be in movies, but he doesn't want to invest in these guys in improv and acting and things like this, and just things that sometimes seem to be so good. It's like, what is it? Because there are obvious fixes that are relatively quick to all of these things, and what is this company's aversion to it, especially now with their stock? Everybody calling out their stock dividend, which is always paid out too high, that's going to take a hit and everything else. Now you're talking about business things. What is the psychosis there in that company? I mean, I don't get it.
I don't either. I honestly don't. Well, you know, it's like we are this, but we want to be something else. And if we tell you we're something else, we can still be this, but you'll think we're something else. You know, it's kind of like the ostrich hiding its head in the sand and thinking nobody can see its body.
It's my three-year-old son, holding his hands over his eyes saying, you can't see me.
Yeah, well, they see, yeah, Cena moving his hand up in front of, down in front of his face, right?
Well, he is one of my son's favorites.
Yeah, this is the company logo now. Seen his hand in front of his face. You know, it's and you know, there's the other thing too. Years ago, Ric Flair took Sting and turned him into a star in one night. I mean, yep. Made him, you know, I mean, he was over a little, but Flair got him over and made him a star in one night. There is nobody in that company that can take anybody else in that company and make them a star in one night. They're just, they're not there. Well, Helmsley might have that capability. Taker, but again, it comes back to the guys, you know, who aren't full-time workers. And, you know, and then if you took one of these guys, name a person, doesn't matter, and say Helmsley took him out there and had a 30-minute four-star match with him and put him over in the middle and then got the microphone and said, this guy is the real deal. And we all said, okay, we're buying that. Now it comes down to, who do we have him work with? Because nobody else can make him look like Helmsley made him look. He doesn't have enough experience to make him to carry himself at that level. And there is no, and he can't take these other guys who haven't been put in that position and make and elevate them to that level. And there's part of the problem. You don't have, you know, it was like, you know, Lord, back in the day, there were guys who, you know, their job was doing, you know, putting guys over, doing jobs, being carpenters, looking at the lights, and yet they were so good at it that they were able to keep working. There's, you know, those guys aren't out there either. So, well, you know, it's like when you put that, when they had Sin Cara with,
Primo?
Cologne. Yeah, with
yeah.
Cologne, and I'm thinking, you know what? As much as you abuse him, Chavo Jr. is the guy to come out here and get this guy over, because Chavo
yeah.
Jr. is that good a performer, you know.
That use of those guys too, and I'm looking at the Raw. Just this is their flagship show, the A show, the Money show. Good guy, John Cena. Well, you know where he's at right now. Rey Mysterio. People still love him. It's not the same anymore. It's long past gone on him, and so is his body. Big Show, who, I it's hard not to like the Big Show. I mean, I don't really want to see him wrestle. He looked like he was dying after that battle royal, but you got him. And then you have Kofi, Evan Bourne, and John Morrison. That's what's left on the biggest show as far as, you know, who you're going to have out there. And now people like all of those guys.
Kofi is entertaining. I like Kofi. I mean, I know Kofi. I like Kofi. He's not your top babyface. He is. Here's a case of a guy who's a damn good performer, but he's not a guy that you can believe in that I think is going to kick so and so's. You know, to me, Kofi is the sidekick to a serious, more grizzled type veteran, and they're a tag team. Kofi is the guy that sells his ass off to get the veteran the hot tag. Sort of thing. Kind of what they tried to do with Bob Holly and Cody a couple years ago is the type of role that I see Kofi in. Evan Bourne, good aerialist, good kid, in good shape. But first of all, since he's come back, he's had his ass handed to him every night. What do you do with that? You know, and, you know, his size obviously works against him. And there's the other thing. If you've got guys who don't have size, then you'd be smart to try to recreate, you know, junior heavyweights or cruiserweights and that sort of thing, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
But, you know, and...
Well, and Evan Bourne to me has always been, I really like him, and he's, you know, kids should like him, sell merchandise, flashy moves. You know, he gets the win on, you know, superstars, but he always, that his job is to put other guys over because you can get sympathy on him and all those sorts of things. You don't kill him. I disagree with you on Kofi in that, to me, he would be the Intercontinental Champion that is relatively protected in that he's still growing. And I'm talking about today, not in past, because it wouldn't be the case, but today of, okay, you put the Intercontinental Champion, he gets wins, he looks good, he continues his progress into maybe becoming something else. And
but we'll see there where you're looking at it, you obviously are looking at it different than I look at it. But to me, my champion has got to be able to kick ass. I mean, that my first thought about my champion is that he can kick ass. Isn't that a cute move, or isn't he clever with his hand signals, or doesn't he come off the top rope, or isn't his music great, you know, or he slaps his hands good with the pyro. It's got to be that this guy kicks ass. Kofi, again, is the type of guy, if I'm a booker, that I want him selling, because that's going to get him his sympathy. Tommy Rich's strongest thing was that the grandmothers and the young girls, you know, wept real tears when he was getting his ass handed to him. But then Tommy had enough of you know, the fire himself and enough size on him to come back. And of course, in a time when you didn't necessarily have to have a great body either. I mean, Tommy was never in tremendous shape, but he stayed lean and he was athletic, but that was his strength. And Kofi just, well, and again, when you put, you've got to look at the size a little bit here, and you stand him in there with Sheamus or Barrett or, you know, any of the heels of note, he doesn't stack up. But it's great for him to get, and that makes it easier to get sympathy for him, you know. Is Cody, I can see him being, he's over better than he was, but again, he has this long history of mediocrity, and that's hard to overcome. You know, not hard if you're just a brand new fan, but it's hard if you've been watching the product for 5 years.
Les, I want to ask you about that in a second, because I'm wondering if this is more of a transitional thing for Cody or what you think about it all the way around, but what's left on Raw on that side then is John Morrison, because obviously Big Show is what Big Show is, and Jerry Lawler should not count, and then, you know, obviously there's your Santinos and JTGs and the like, and fine. So at least John Morrison. Do you put John Morrison in the same category as you do Kofi Kingston? Because you could draw a lot of parallels there, because I think John Morrison is, I would believe it more with him, but it's just, I don't believe it with him or R-Truth on the other side right now. I think people are way over-raving about Ron Killing's performance over the last 2 weeks. And again, I like the guy, but I'm not buying it. I don't really buy it right now with John Morrison. Is he in the Kofi category?
No, I think Morrison is different. He's got a different look. He's got a little more size. I can't really tell you what the IT is in the difference, but I can tell you there is a difference. And yes, I could see them. Now, I would find some way to let Morrison convey that, this opposed to you smoke, so I need to beat you up because that makes you a bad guy. because some of these children's fathers probably smoke too, so are they supposed to look at their father and tell him they can't talk to him anymore because he smoked cigarettes? I don't think so. Last week, Doc and Will on Weekly, on the Observer site, were talking. Well, you know, they've got some anti-smoking guy telling them that they owe the children an apology. I said, well, that's wonderful. Is that guy going to buy a pay-per-view? I mean,
I'm surprised they kind of liked it, didn't they?
Well, Well, that's what I mean. They thought it was because this anti-smoking guy, mentioned it and thought, you know, this made Killings a heel. Okay, but that guy, first of all, is not a wrestling fan. He's not going to buy a pay-per-view, and he probably, why did he see this? I have no idea, except that he probably has people in his company or in his group that are searching for smoking things that for them to hit on, right? I mean, if you fired one up in the church parking lot and they happen to see it, then they're going to come down on it. It has nothing to do with wrestling, I think Killings probably did his best promo on Monday. But then
do you think he
one promo doesn't make a career. That's not going to overcome you know, a few years of middle of the card up and down. Again, see, that's they're indiscriminate in what they do with people. And, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, I was reading Animal's book, and he said, you know, Vince planning a year in advance made it tough on people. You know, actually, it makes it easier to a certain degree, because then you know how to use somebody. If, you know, if this guy is coming up, if I see something in him, then I don't want to start beating him every night, or just saying, you know, having the writer say, well, we need somebody to get so-and-so over. Well, throw this guy in there without just, you know, we need a quick decision. Throw this guy in there. Well, wait a minute. No, let's don't throw this guy in there, because I got plans for him down the road once he's got a little seasoning and once, you know, we establish him. And, you know, they just bop guys in and out and up and down. And if wins and losses meant something, you know, when we talk to the kids in Evolve, you know, when you make them try to make them mean something, then people take some stock, you know, they take more stock in it in that respect. But then your announcers have to say, why did this guy lose? You know, it's like you're going to watch something on UFC, and when you come back to report on it, you're going to say, well, you know, so-and-so, you know, was favored going into this fight, but he pulled, you know, he had a hamstring problem a week before, and the hamstring started bothering him in the second round. I mean, then there's a logical reason for things. We don't give those things. You know, you mentioned Evan Bourne. Sheamus handed Evan Bourne his ass. Why? I don't know. He just handed him his ass. And then so-and-so handed Evan Bourne his ass. Why? Well, I don't know. He just handed him his ass. Right? So, I mean, it's just Evan Bourne is obviously not good enough to beat anybody. But, you know, so if you find substance and reasoning for everything, even the little things, then you can tie them together and you can, you know, you can make an excuse or a reason for somebody losing or winning for that matter, you know? Hey, I thought going into this, Bourne never had a chance, but, you know, what's his name came up lame with a hamstring and Bourne took advantage of it. Well, you know, that's what this business is about and that sort of thing. So it's a story, and it gives people something, some substance to sink their teeth into, other than just, he got beat, here you going. Okay, now go, let's move on to the next thing. You know, like I said about the tag teams at you know, for the draft. I mean, the Battle Royal, excuse me. And I'm not demeaning these guys because, you know, they work as hard as anybody else, but it's how they're used. And so you've had a meaningless Battle Royal, basically, and that's what you're hanging your hat on. Why? Is all the general managers drunk or on drugs or what? You know, again, to me, you parallel, I realize our business is a work, it's a show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So is Justified, which I sink my teeth into. The new Law & Order LA, which is edgy and gives you a reason to come back and watch it the next week. The Good Wife, which the name implies something that it's not a women's show, but the chicanery of this law firm and the ins and outs of the politics, you can't wait till, I mean, it's like when the hour is over, it's like, oh my God, man, can we fast forward to next Monday so I can see it again? There's a reason, and that's what's lacking. There is no reason for so much of this. I mean, except for, you know, you smoked a cigarette, so I think I need to kick your ass.
Well, that's always the thing with me, that there's never any excuse for it too, because you go, okay, wins and losses, you can do this stuff. Well, we're not athletes. Oh, okay, you're going to be entertainment. Well, there's storyline, you know, that you got to draw them in. It's like they're not doing anything right. It's amazing. Now they did have a story into Cody Rhodes. What do you feel about this? Because I know there's always room for a little bit of wackiness in wrestling, and Cody was such a goofball character. Again, another one that they lost like DiBiase, when they probably should have struck while the iron was hot to at least move him into a different direction. They failed, and he ends up becoming Dashing Cody, and they needed to do something to get out of that where, okay, he can take advantage of Drew McIntyre's issues on SmackDown that he's had, and Matt Hardy leaving and some other things like that where, okay, we're going to turn him into something more diabolical. They've gone the comic book route with him, which is kind of like, I guess, a Doctor Doom sort of thing with his face. Do you believe this is a transitional thing? It should be, probably. Do you think this is a transitional thing, or do you think this is something that they will probably go on way too long for? Because even though I can't buy Cody as, again, like you were talking about, a top tier, he's going to kick your ass kind of guy, I think there is, obviously, you got to see what you can do with him more than just the character that he is. And let's see if he can carry somewhat of a ball on a side that only has Wade Barrett and Sheamus. What do you feel about Cody right now and this character, and will they make a mistake here?
Well, I think maybe they'll drag it on too long. It's sort of, you know, sort of like Jillian Hall's wart or whatever the hell that
oh, the mole
growth was, you know? I mean, they made so much out of it that, it was comical. It was as grotesque as it was to begin with, it just became comically grotesque, right? I mean, it wasn't something that you felt sorry, and then all of a sudden it disappeared.
Oh, the boogeyman ate it. Or whatever the hell it was. I think it was the boogeyman bit it off.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That tells you
he
anything.
But, see, I had forgotten. It was so memorable that I forgot that happened. But, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just stupid. How stupid was that? I mean,
exactly.
Seriously, how stupid? Or her not being able to sing. And, I mean, and you realize that every time she came out there, that, I mean, it was shtick because, you know, it's like, you know, let's say you or I work in an office of 50 people and you get up and start singing off key. How long is your boss going to tolerate that, right? You know, before it comes down to Mike, either shut your damn mouth or you don't have a job anymore. I mean, you know, you can go back to when DX did Vince This Is Your Life and showed that he was sleeping with these big fat women and stuff. You knew it was shtick. It was funny, but it was shtick. It wasn't something you couldn't say, I can't wait to flop down my $40 to get a pay-per-view to see what happens, because you know it's crap. I mean, it's Three Stooges. It's Laurel and Hardy. It's Martin and Lewis. It's not anything that is controversial enough that, you know, that you can sink your teeth into it. I've seen, you know, I was talking about this the other day with somebody, but something as simple in the character. Now, it worked then. It would not work now because there's been so much gaga, you know, that they've diluted the waters. But Bobby Kay, they talked, and it was for weeks on Charlotte TV, talking about different things, you know, and how the family got together and did family sings and this and that and the other thing. And Bobby said, you know, unlike Bill Ward, well, Bobby, you play the guitar. Yes, I do, Bill. The guitar was handed down like from my grand. I don't remember the exact story, Mike, but I'm just, you know, throwing this out there. The guitar was handed down from my grandfather and this and that. Well, you know, we've gotten some mail from some of the fans that have heard us talk about this, and why don't you bring, you know, come on the air and, you know, and serenade us sometime. Okay, fine. So, you know, but it was built up over weeks. It wasn't like Bobby came out at the top of the hour and said, hey, I got this guitar from my grandfather. Well, Bobby, you sing. Yeah, well, why don't you sing for us? Okay, and then why don't the heel come out and break the guitar? But it built up over a period of time, and Bobby had some kind of, I think it was Larry Hamilton. I think it was Zamaler. I'm not sure. I forget. It's been too many years ago. But anyway, he had, you know, but it wasn't a full-blown angle, right? They had just had some words and passed each other going to and from the ring and gave each other the look, you know, and there was comments on it, but the announcers didn't beat it to death, you know. It was something to mention because it was seeable on the television screen. But, you weren't trying to build something out of it. It was you talked about it in passing. So anyway, Bobby comes out with it, you know, and Bill Ward says, well, you know, you've heard Bobby talk about it, you know, the guitar that's handed down through the family and how the family got together and you know, did sing-alongs. And so Bobby's going to, you know, serenade us tonight. And Bobby, what would you like to do? I'd like to do this. And so Larry, you know, Mahler comes out and grabs a guitar and, you know, doesn't break it on Bobby's head because nobody knew about how to put powder in guitars back then and stuff. But he breaks the guitar, you know, breaks the guitar on the ring post. And they've got a full-blown angle, you know. But it's serious. It's, you know, Mahler doesn't come back and play the kazoo or anything. It's almost, and this goes all the way back, if you remember, Foley and Terry Funk when they were when Road Dogg and Billy pushed them
in the
dumpster off the stage.
Yeah.
And it and everyone and they took time to get them out of there. And I mean, I'm loving this, Mike. I'm thinking, oh my God, what a hell of an angle! And they killed their own angle by letting Mick and Terry come back, dragging the IVs behind them in their damn hospital gowns. If they'd have left them out, and it's almost like we got to tell you it's a work. We've already done that. We know it's It's like the heel in Iron Man, the movie, right? Coming out with Iron Man at the end, arm in arm, and saying, "Man, we just fooled you, didn't we?" You know, it kills the moment.
That was the whole thing. No, the Lone Ranger and all that sort of stuff. It wasn't like he got up and dusted himself off and said, "Thanks for shooting me," but we're going to get you the next time or something.
It never made
any sense.
And it comes back to the thing that I mentioned earlier too, about taking your time to put something together. So much of this is just like this is what we're going to do, and those people watching will buy it. No, you obviously can tell us. You also honestly know that people aren't buying it. That's why you're in a panic, But you instead of trying to take. And here's the thing: if things are down. They're only going to get so far down. I mean, it's not like you can. So now let's start to build them up. How do we do that? Well, we start to instill things here that makes the people want to come back and watch next week. We don't give them everything that we're trying to sell them on the pay-per-view, which is what they basically did Monday night. I think that they have been watching TNA. I'm not real sure.
Oh, God, I've thought that ever since they've wanted to do things like theme out pay-per-views and Money in the Bank instead of just having it as a match, which WrestleMania missed this year. I know, believe me, if that match went away just because of the risk they take. But, I mean, it was an outstanding thing where it's like, that was missing, and it didn't deserve to be a pay-per-view because no one wants to see two or three in one night.
Right.
I always love this because it's a bullshit excuse when it comes to why they can't build up long-term storylines or why they feel the need to rush them so quickly. Well,
right.
We have a pay-per-view every month. Here's a novel concept. Have belts that actually matter, the Intercontinental, U.S. title, your number one contender titles, even though they should only have one world title, you have two. You stagger storylines, and you have enough guys there. You have 9 trillion people on the roster. How about this? Staggering storylines so they take place over 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. They go through multiple pay-per-views that people may actually then want to buy instead
sure.
of waiting until the
sure.
Monday or whatever day after and then going, hey, how was it? No, wasn't any good? Well, I won't spend any money on it then.
Well, they've made this transition from pro wrestling to sports entertainment to sports comedy to sports shtick to whatever. Maybe you make the full cycle and go back to what brought you to the dance to start with 25 or 30 years ago. I mean, because you realize how many fans you have now that would be fresh to, plus how many opportunists, how many people, even from your age to mine, that might come back to the product if they saw if they saw something that they believed in, that they wanted to. When I say believe, and I don't mean that they think, well, it's all real again, because that's, not the case, but I mean, it's like a good dramatic show, It's what,
And wrestling was always a snapshot somewhat of society that you could say from good versus evil to boss versus employee to family members being involved. There's always so many things throughout all of professional wrestling, throughout all of the territories that made people want to watch. And you have and one of the things is the athleticism. And you got UFC 129 this weekend, which will do 850,000 pay-per-view buys, probably at least. People are talking upwards of a million. I don't think it will go that high. But 55,000 people inside that dome, legit sold. A $15 million gate almost, legitimately. The fan, all that money generated, all that interest, all that hype. And all you have to do if you're WWE is just take a snapshot of that and go, oh, yeah, wins and losses matter. Smaller guys can actually choke you out. This, a guy the size of Daniel Bryan can choke you into pieces. Sin Cara will break your arm if he gets a hold of it. It's very simple. And again, it's I know we talk about this every week, and I'm beating it to death tonight.
Well, you know,
just,
let me ask you this.
I'm so depressed watching.
First, I want to say that the wrong person left Dancing with the Stars. Chris did a hell of a job for the industry. He did. I think everybody should take their hat off to him. He showed class and professionalism and did more positive for the wrestling industry than it's been able to do for itself, and I think we need to commend him for that. I would have rather seen the little girl from Playboy go, because I think he was entertaining and engaging, and on Kimbo, he and Cheryl did a hell of a job. I mean, he's just done a hell of a job, and I thought it was so classy that with his final dance that he went up to the judges and shook Bruno and Len's hand and hugged Carrie Ann, and I mean that was he was so gracious in defeat and everything. I can't say enough good about it. It's just a shame that, and as I understand it, his numbers did go up. I mean, it was very close on that final vote between him and the other couple. So
I got my seven in.
Yeah, he's done a hell of a job. How about Tough Enough this week? What'd you think?
I know there's a lot of people who the balloon was so deflated that that Rima was not verbally drummed off the show or anything like that. I thought that it was perfect timing. We've been talking about Rima. We've been seemingly the only supporters of her on the show, because I think, again, people overthink it a little bit too much. And it's like, you know what? That was good. That was good. And her not being there anymore and her body not being able to hold up and how they went about it, I thought was good. And it was just like, even though I thought it was a little contrived of, I shouldn't say that too, with Mrs. Fairplay. I thought it was good TV, and it was perfect timing for the show too, because you know what, if she did stay on there any longer with her lack of skill, it would be a little bit too over the top.
Yeah, I said, and I think Steve was right, she's tough from the neck up. And of course, they've got time constraints there, you know. I know I've had people ask me this week, do you think she can make it? I said, well, I'd be more apt to say if she had several months to really give it a try, she might, because she's got her head into it. Rome wasn't built in a day. Everybody didn't, come into the business being a natural. I don't see any of those women being tremendous there.
Rima would need a whole full body change, or should in theory. They don't, because they're such sticks in WWE, but in theory, to take punishment, she would need a body change as far as how she trains and all that stuff would take time.
Well, somebody asked me, what would you, I said, well, first of all, I'd say, Rima, let's find a weight room and start getting you a little stronger, but then also you could work on her bumps and stuff. Yeah, she wasn't good. I tell you what I did like, when her and Bill had the midnight workout, that he sat her down and talked, and it showed his human side, and I think that's important too, because that's something I know I've had people talk about, how Bill got the bum rap in Atlanta, and I said, Jesus, that's all wrong, because he helped me here, and worked with kids, and you've got to push buttons, it's like if you're going in the NBA and which player you're going to give Kobe Bryant the ball when the game's on the line at the end. Did he earn it? Yes. But how do you know that? Well, he's had to work at it. There's pressure. In high school, in college, he didn't go to college, but in high school and then in the transition with the pros, There were coaches in his ear and yelling at him and in his face, and you got to tell these people, there's pressure to deliver. That's what we've talked about for the last hour. What they're lacking is those people that can step up and give you the game, and win the game for you in theory when you need them to, and those people aren't out there. So it's important that you test these people in terms of pressure, because if they can't handle the pressure there, they're damn sure not going to handle it, on WrestleMania with all that money on the line, or in a segment where they've got to carry the ball and take you from Raw to the next pay-per-view. You know, because the pressure's there, so you've got to be able to handle it. So, but I was glad, you know, they showed that side of Bill. Did you notice that when Bret Hart mentioned the word wrestling, it was bleeped out?
There's another one of those. I probably over the last couple of weeks, it's just less. There was a when Rich, I first interviewed Rich. When I was working for the Torch, when TNA went to start their weekly pay per views, and always be a big very interested in Jarrett family. Like, you know what? Okay, they need a reviewer for it. I'll do it. I'll get them every week. I'd probably be doing it anyway. But I got up with Rich that way because he was started up the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com site. And I remember talking to him, and he had no clue what was going on. Because he hadn't watched in so long. I couldn't fathom it. It's like, I know wrestling isn't what I want it to be from how I liked it, but I can't fathom anyone not watching it. Or I can't fathom not at least watching it or following it a little bit. Over the last couple of weeks, not that I don't want to watch it anymore, but it's just from a business, from a creative, from a what I love about pro wrestling or even what I would tolerate over, quote-unquote entertainments, it's brutal. And there's another example of it of, The list that Brian Alvarez put in the Figure Four Weekly 2 weeks ago over what is should be said, shouldn't be said, what they want out of announcers and wrestlers and everything else, and you went through the effort of beeping wrestling on this show. Really?
Right. Yeah, that's crazy. It is. I mean, you know what? And I didn't realize. I knew the kid looked familiar, but I didn't realize it, and. My friend Sarge, who trained with me here for over a year, who ran Altitude Pro Wrestling Academy in Denver, and I've been out there and did a camp with Harley. I did a camp with Dr. Tom. I did one by myself out there. But anyway, the kid that they called Donny Osmond, he was at all those camps. And I just it slipped my mind. You work with so many kids and just work with them over a weekend. But, yeah, he was, because Jeff called me, he said, you know the kid of Donny Osmond? He said, you remember working with him? I said, he looked familiar, Jeff, but I had forgotten about it. And then somebody told me today, which I didn't know, the kid they call Skidmarks, Tracy Smothers trained.
Oh, wow. Well, that's what I think people have heard for the first time this week too, which I had actually known about too. Dutch Mantel and Jeremiah Riggs.
Yeah,
trained him because Jeremiah was smart enough to know, doing his MMA training that he wanted to know what he was getting into, and I guess did a good spell with Dutch.
Right, right.
And it's amazing how they wouldn't want to, because I guess there was. Beefing or whining about the term independent wrestler or the indies, which the fact that they would fight USA over that one or attempt to, again, is just, or the producers of the show is just bizarre, where it's like, wouldn't you want these guys to, because obviously you're too cheap to want to go out there and have your own training centers outside of Florida, which should have all the potential in the world and it has all the right guys in the world there, but they have this cookie cutter thing and too early, guys pull up too early and all that stuff. Wouldn't you want these guys to go see, you want people to go out and wrestle? Don't you want to have wrestlers and people interested in wrestling where maybe they go seek out the indie around their house? You don't have to say TNA or Ring of Honor or anything for that matter, but can you acknowledge that there's a way to get into this thing without being WWE?
Sure, absolutely.
You're just eliminating your future.
You mentioned up the road here in Dayton. The Dayton Dragons baseball team. It's the Reds. I'm not sure if it's double A or single A. They built a nice new ballpark up there a few years ago. And, it's quaint. It's not huge. I forget what the seating is, Mike. But they sell out virtually every game. And all those people have to do is get on S-75 and drive, 40, 50 miles down the road. And they come to a Reds game and see Major League. But the way that team is marketed up there, and it's home. And yes, there's a place for small groups. But again, it would behoove WWE or TNA, for that matter, to subsidize these people. And I don't mean the few bucks that they put out for developmental. I've been down that road. It's a decent payday and it's decent help, but it, for what they want out of you, for what the potential actually is, if they would put some more serious money into it, it's not near what it should be, you know. And it could be a lot better, yes. And, you know, well, like the situation Jeff had, my friend Sarge had out in Denver. He ran a nice little operation. I think there was, I don't know about right now, but, you know, a couple years ago, there were like two independents in the entire state. So these people aren't, and how many times did WWE go there, right? I mean, you could have built a good little, you know, around the communities in and around Denver and Denver itself. But, you know, and to give these guys a chance to develop and grow, like I said at the top of the show, how do you know who's going to, you know, what a guy's level is if you don't give him a chance to achieve it? And, you know, rather than just programming him into what you want him to be because he has a particular smile or this or that or the other thing. And they've got the people to do it. It's just allowing those people the freedom, you know, to do what they know how to do. But, again, it's part of that corporate mentality. We have to micromanage this, you know. And that's not just the wrestling business, as you know. It's a lot of businesses.
Oh, God, but, yeah. Always go ahead.
It is what it is. Should we wrap this up or not? I mean, if we
actually,
beat this to death or...
I was going to transition to the UFC here because
I don't want you to not do that. I'm you know, go right ahead. I'm all ears, Michael.
Oh, that's what I just I know I've been beating this to death tonight, and I know I've been doing it over the last few weeks, and I apologize to people, but I'm finding it just more insufferable and just amazing. I'm depressed and amazed by how this is happening to a company that wants to make money. For any company, I just don't get it. But company that does get it is right now the Ultimate Fighting Championships, and a guy, Dana White's everywhere. You talk about a micromanager, Dana White is everywhere. There's a bunch of other smart people as well, and all of those smart people got together and created this George St. Pierre Jake Shields show taking place in Toronto on Saturday night on pay-per-view. Said before, 55,000 tickets sold for this thing. They announced today, and, you know, they talk about WrestleMania with this. You know, the UFC announced today that 48 out of the 50 states will be there, all 10 provinces, you know, three territories in Canada, and every continent besides Antarctica is going to have a ticket buyer actually go to Toronto to see this event. And George St. Pierre faces off against Jake Shields, was the guy that Strikeforce, his last appearance on Strikeforce on CBS, the last Strikeforce that was on CBS, he defeated Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson, a big move, moving from UFC to Strikeforce. It was going to be a big deal. Jake Shields kind of ruined that show, and Jake Shields hasn't lost in 6 years. Dana White, a couple days after that event, was seen smiling in the front row of a UFC show with Shields next to him. It was looking like, okay, we're going to get Shields, GSP, it's going to be impressive. And then Jake Shields went out against Martin Campman. And as Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez said, when they saw a elevator door open before that fight the day before, he looked like a walking ghost. And he had cut so much weight so poorly that he looked like he was going to die in that fight. Still good enough to somehow eke out a 5-round decision over Campman. A little bit controversial, but it looked as though that maybe this probably wouldn't be a fight that anyone would care about. And then comes the UFC promotional machine that, again, pro wrestling's done for years. Boxing's done. Everyone's done that successful in doing a promotion. They gave people reason to pay for the fight, making you believe that Jake Shields has got a shot against George St. Pierre. But one of the better commercials seen for an upcoming fight in a long – if actually, it was the best commercial scene for a fight or a pro wrestling event since the last time they did one, which was their first, George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck. Did everything right. The Undisputed shows that have been on in the countdown shows leading into this, it's made people believe that Jake Shields has actually got a shot to win this fight, and he does. I think he's more apt to win with a lucky punch than his great ground and wrestling skills or his great grappling skills that have been trying to be shown on Countdown. I think George St. Pierre wins a pretty, well, not one-sided. I think it'll be a very competitive, fun fight, but I think George St. Pierre wins clearly in five rounds. But again, what will happen at the end of this is a huge major event for the UFC that got in a whole lot of mainstream fans and separated them from $60. And Les, I know you don't watch much, but for the people that come to the gym and your average, you know, kind of part-time UFC fan, are any of them talking about this fight?
I've heard a couple people mention it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I obviously a lot of the people I work with are not, you know, young and into, the whole thing. But Matt Hamill comes into our gym occasionally and trains. And there are people that recognize him. He's from, our gym is based in Loveland. That's where he went to high school. That's where his family lives. And so he comes in there occasionally when he's in town and trains. But, yeah, I've heard some talk about it. I'm a fan. I'm certainly no expert, you know.
Any interest in, like, if you did buy him, though, you know, something like this, I mean, would you want to spend $50 on this?
Yeah, well, you know, I think what makes me interested is the buildup, is the, you know, the shows that Spike puts on the air, you know, showing, you know, these guys in training and that's what either perks my interest or doesn't for some reason, you know. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I would say that's how it, you know, it should be with fights like that, like the HBO 24/7s. I mean, you know,
yeah.
You catch it out of the corner of your eye, and then it keeps you from turning the channel because you just get interested.
Yeah, back a couple of years ago, I had no, I knew the name Floyd Mayweather, but I had no, you know, and then on the 24/7 when they were built up for the fight, that his dad had, had actually trained his opponent, and then his dad had come back to his camp, and the whole human interest thing got me more interested in actually seeing the fight, then the fact of who was champion or who might be champion, you know, it's just to see what it was, the behind the scenes drama, so to speak, I guess, you know, that perked my interest more than the fact, because I'm not a boxing fan as such. I can remember when the whole MMA thing first started, and I'd read about it in the Observer. And I'm thinking, okay, whatever, you know. But then as time went on, I become more a fan, and I'll watch Unleashed. You know, they bring back some of the fights and stuff. I'll tend, you know, to watch that, and of course the previews going into the big fights and stuff, and the Ultimate Fighter. I haven't seen a lot of it this year. I just haven't had the time.
I tell you what, you're not missing anything. It's, you know, I think it's a concept that's been broken, and, you know, Brock Lesnar is not for his, it's not that Brock Lesnar is not charismatic, it's not that he's not great when it comes to a TV camera, but, you know, it's Junior Dos Santos and Brock Lesnar as far as being foils on this show, and that's what the show's built on a lot, it's not exactly the fighters as much as it is the coaches. It's not working, and it's time for a concept change, because I think they should just focus more on things like the Countdown shows, of maybe focus on just a couple of guys instead of doing this series, at least for a little while, because it's all kind of just been done before, and there's no – you're waiting on the drama, and for me, when you wait on the drama, sometimes it becomes manufactured, or it's the drinking or one of those sorts of things that I don't necessarily want to see on a show like that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like I'd said to you about the broken door. The first time, it had an impact. The second time, I was afraid it was part of the show.
No,
you know?
It's the fact that there are a lot of people.
If this is my building and those doors are that fragile, well, between shows, I mean, but you know, between Ultimate Fighters, I'm going to change the doors.
It's actually become a joke in the MMA world of, you know, God, maybe they should install some doors for Brock to rip down. So it's already, even they picked up on the gag. I mean, it was
well,
so
you know, now there's a young man who trains at our place in the mornings that is doing some MMA training. And now whether he'll ever fight professionally or not, I don't know. But he's there's several couple gyms in the area, Franklin's for one, you know, and a couple names that I'm not really familiar with that are, you know, teaching Muay Thai and you know, and MMA and so forth. But anyway, this kid's name is Adam. And I know when we first started talking about it, he was saying, well, you know, Brock Lesnar shouldn't be a coach. And I said, well, you know, Adam, he's look at his wrestling. Yeah, but, you know, he's only had, you know, like three fights. And so, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, obviously I'm pro Lesnar because of knowing him, you know, from OVW and that whole thing. So, but I see the kid's point, you know, why, you know, and of course he is, you know, he's training to fight MMA, so he's far more important in his opinion than mine, and you know, and if he looks at it that way, then I'm sure a lot of people probably look at it the way, don't you think?
I would think so. But
you know,
because we're going to run out of time here too. Just running out a couple of the other matches on the show. Jose Aldo, featherweight against Mark Hominick. For the first time in UFC, first time since the WEC merger that the featherweight title will be defended. So Jose Aldo against Mark Hominick, which Aldo is explosive and nasty. I mean, Uriah Faber did go five rounds with him, but it was pretty one-sided at one of the last WEC shows. He is, I mean, just, and again, and here's a 145-pound man who is just going to be vicious, and I think he probably knocks him out in the first round to the dismay of the Canadians there. But, I mean, elbows, fists, knees, he's going to throw it all, but I think it's going to be punches that end up doing it. One of the more interesting eras coming to an end, possibly, even though Terry Funk has proven time and time again, you never say the word retirement unless you just want to break it and come back, unless you're Les too. Les actually did it. Most guys can't do it, but Randy Couture is saying it, and after taking a lot of time off, he is coming back to face Lyoto Machida, who is one of the top 205-pound fighters in the world. Basically looking at this as a, can he solve the puzzle of Machida? A big test, as it probably should be for, you know, a Hall of Fame and a legendary fighter on the way out the door. Les, conditioning, and obviously you're an expert in it, and physical fitness, an expert. Randy Couture going to be, I think, 46. If Herschel Walker's 48, I think Randy Couture is turning 46. Just an incredible, you know, wrestler who never lost that wrestling mentality. Physically, for what he's going to do at 46 years old with Machida, who, again, one of the top flight 205-pound guys in the world, it is absolutely amazing, isn't it?
It is. Well, you know, and a lot of that physical thing comes down to genetics as well, though, Mike, you know. Herschel Walker genetically, I mean, chronologically is 2 years older, but genetically probably 5 years younger, you know. Football not being as, well, football brutal, and he played it for a long time, but then he's been away from things and still stayed in condition where Couture has been fighting, you know, and been putting his body on the line. So, you know, I meant, you know, I was interested when he fought Silva in Columbus. I thought, here's the, you know, here's the, this 40-year-old guy that's a top babyface, and the whole story. You know, we're talking about storylines, and it was I thought it was a great story, and he won. It was a great story, and the crowd reaction was great. You know, but again, it's kind of, how many times can you do that? You know, and how many times can you say you're going to retire, and you know, before the gild wears off the lily, as it were. You know, but I'd be curious. Yeah, you know what? And to me, that's probably, as a casual fan, a more interesting fight than the Shields, George, you know, encounter, simply because of Couture's history. But will it be his last fight? And honestly, after watching him with Brock and so forth, again, I'm no expert at this, but I would think it should be.
No,
If he were to win this fight, where does he go from there? Will he quit, or will he decide to fight again?
If I were him, and my money's right, I would say, you're going to give me a, you know what, I wouldn't even do that because I don't even think he cares about a title anymore. I mean, he's held them all. I mean, he's the only guy to hold both the heavyweight and 205-pound titles anyway. I mean, unless all of a sudden he got a second win and said, yeah, let me go after the title and ask for a title shot, I couldn't think of a better way to go out, I mean, especially because no one, all right, very few times do you ever get to go out and fighting the way you want to go. And I think it would be an awesome way to do it. Now, and what
right.
I would also do is leaves the door open, I think, for the next time, too, if he did decide in the year that, hey, I did beat that guy, to hell with it, I do want a title shot.
But, you know, if they're heavily advertising this as his final fight, I think if I were the guy pulling the strings, it would be his final fight, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, at least, you know, and they control, you know, Strikeforce and anything that's, you know, comparable in terms of UFC. So it's not like he's going someplace else. I mean, he goes someplace else to fight, but it wouldn't have the impact, I don't think, or the opponents that, you know, the machine, as you mentioned, the UFC machine in place to make it is important. But, yeah, it just seems... It seems the right time for me to walk away, I think, win or no. You know, and it just seems like if he wins and changes his mind, I just think that takes the edge off. To me, again, as a casual fan, that's the way I look at it.
And I wish – the UFC kind of does this with jiu-jitsu demonstrations and exhibitions and things like that. I don't want to say an old-timers league or anything like that, but I think it would be a cool idea if they had exhibitions and they can continue to keep older guys in the mix and guys who are uber-competitive. Because, you know, there's 40 and 45-year-old guys who will actually wrestle in the open invitational wrestling tournaments that take place alongside college kids and things like that.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, and it
well, I remember Bobby Orton Jr. telling me a number of years ago about he and Randy, you know, wrestling in tournaments. You know, I mean, Bobby obviously is in the Masters, you know, and Randy with the kids. But I don't know that, you know, how effective it would be. You know, there's times that I see my contemporaries that I wish I didn't see. You know, but
I guess that's also you get to the point too where you know a guy may want to do it and it's like no, I don't think you should do it. And I guess they try to force. I get that could be an issue there. I guess too. I didn't really think about that since obviously the average age of even an older MMA guy. I mean, Couture's one of the oldest ones, and you know he's only like I said 46 years old. So yeah, I didn't really think about it that way. If like a guy in his 60s would want to, but I tell you what, if Danny Hodge wanted to, I'd let him.
Yeah, I might be interested to see that. Yeah.
Well, we hour and a half. We'll cut it off about a half hour early. I just kind of took a peek at the radar, and as I was doing so, we now have severe thunderstorm warnings for Delaware, with the possibility of hail and all those sorts of things too. And I hope everyone that can be listening and is listening in the Southeast is staying safe, unless obviously with the warnings for you, I hope you stay safe as well. And it was a terrible day for weather today when it comes to tornadoes. I guess it's actually going to go down as big as the super outbreak of 1974, which predates me by 2 years. So I'm glad I don't remember that. And were you Southeast Tennessee and far northwest Georgia, I guess, got pounded then. Do you remember that in 74?
You know what? I was not. No, I wasn't around most of that. I was bouncing in 74. I was in the Carolinas. Well, let's see. Early 74, I was in Georgia. That was during the war. And it was when I was working in the Georgia office, and Gordon and I were doing the TV. Then I went back to Charlotte. And then in November of 74, I started bouncing back and forth between Knoxville and Charlotte and did that through 77. So I was just up in that, you know, from Charlotte to Knoxville as far as Charlotte, whatever the territory covered, you know, from Monday through Thursday. And then I was in Knoxville Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then back, you know, back down. So... But I don't remember getting involved in any of those. And luckily enough, when I was in Nashville, There's nothing that hit close to us. Or I've been, you know, pretty lucky with that stuff. But yeah, it's tough on those people. And let's hope Rich can come out of the basement, not the closet.
Yeah,
because
I
think
any more last minute things is just to go just with us. I think you're going to kill me after a while here, and I think we need to turn that hate around and both have it on Rich.
Yeah. I heard that. So,
well,
so what do you got going on next week or this week or whatever?
Well, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, I'm sure we're going to record another one here real soon. The end of the first round of the hockey playoffs taking place. Lots of things happening in Japan and all over the place. You know, Japanese wrestling kind of is the muse for us, but we end up talking about a incredible host of other subjects as well. And obviously every Sunday with Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network and Sirius Channel 125 from 6 to 8 Eastern Time, which you can go over to the WrestlingObserver.com website and check out the information on that. And Les, your turn to plug away, but I guess first
all
I'll
right,
remind
well,
everyone.
Tomorrow afternoon I'll be on
Pro
Wrestling Insider Elite site with Mike Johnson and Mike Epsonhart on Wrestler's Eye Audio. And then over the weekend on the Observer Figure 4 site with Doc Young and Will Strauss on Wrestling Weekly. And then back here next week, hopefully with Rich will join Mike and I. And once again, I want to remind everybody, if you plan to come to the Manchester, Georgia training camp, it has been postponed due to building issues. Hopefully we'll have it. Brian's talking about maybe June or July, and of course I'll have that news here on the show and post it on both my websites when we get those dates locked in. And I guess then we'll be back here next week, hopefully without tornadoes, Mike.
Yes, I hope so. God, I hope so. And Les, thank you very much for doing this again tonight with me, just one-on-one here. And I hope everyone has a really good night and everyone stays safe. Thank you very much from everyone here at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.